Hello, this is Dee with the Vermilion County News for December 4th, 2017. We'll begin our reading with the front page story called Community Effort, Westville Santa's Brighten Children's Holiday by Carol Rem. Westville. For more than four decades, dozens of community members have volunteered their time and gift wrapping skills to make the holidays brighter for some of Westville's families in need. The Santa's Anonymous program started in 1976 when the late Cindy Patake, who also served as Westville's mayor in the early 1990s, and her friend Debbie Serpinas decided to buy Christmas gifts for a family in need rather than exchange gifts between the two of them. Serpinas recalled that she had watched an episode of Little House on the Prairie during which the Ingalls family received very few Christmas gifts. I've been totally blessed with receiving lots of gifts, but the show made me think about all the families who couldn't afford a lot of gifts, and I kind of felt guilty, she said. When Patake and Serpinas contacted one of the schools for the name of a family they could help, they ended up buying gifts for a dozen families that year. 41 years later, Serpinas and Darlene Oakes, who has been involved with Santa's Anonymous for 39 years, continue organizing the program every year in memory of their friend Patake, who died in 2013. I give all the credit to Cindy. It became her passion, and it's important to us too, Serpinas said. She didn't have children, but they became her children. Even after decades of involvement with Santa's Anonymous, Serpinas and Oakes admit they were lost that first year without Patake. Cindy did all the details, Serpinas said, and she and Oakes had to jump in to continue the program before it was computerized. Five women, Serpinas, Oakes, Sherry Toth, Renee Stein, and Ellen Peck, Patake's sister, now make sure Santa's Anonymous continues on. They meet in August each year to begin planning for that year's holiday season, Oakes said. We're really hoping more young people will get interested in it, Serpinas said. We were 25 when we started this. One change that has occurred in the last 4 years is that the important information the women use to organize and run the program is now kept on a computer. In fact, this year was the first time Westville families could apply online for toys for their children. We send close to 1,000 pre-applications home with all the children in Westville schools, Serpinas said. If they're interested, the parents fill out and their child can bring it back to the school nurse. On the pre-application, they let us know if they want an application, Oakes added. It's income-based, or they could have overwhelming medical bills or have had a fire, Oakes said of the program's eligibility requirements. Serpinas goes through the applications, which are strictly limited to families with children in the Westville School District, but also checks with other local organizations that distribute toys at the holidays to make sure the same families aren't already being helped. It's a working partnership with the other organizations, she said. We check with the Salvation Army and Project Success. The schools help us too. Santa's Anonymous typically provides toys for between 50 and 60 Westville families each Christmas, and Serpinas and Oakes are quick to point out that the program wouldn't be possible without the help of the entire community. The Lions Club has been generous and partners with us, Serpinas said. We have someone in the community who knows if we ever need money to let them know. Bunko clubs and churches give us donations too, Oakes said. A couple of businesses have been donating for years. We have so many people who are a part of this. It's hard to remember all of them. Serpinas said she is grateful for the Westville American Legion that allows Santa's Anonymous to store and sort the toys there. Santa's Anonymous is trying to raise funds to acquire a used enclosed trailer to store the toys in, but it might take a while. The Legion lets us do this every year, she said. They let us use their party room for 6 weeks. Tables and boxes of new and gently used toys already filled an entire room at the Legion, and that was before 10 toy collection barrels were set up earlier this week around Westville. In addition to toys, every child receives a warm hat, gloves, and scarf. The barrels will be out until we do the final toy sort on December 16th, Serpina said. 88% of the toys we receive are new. The toy barrels are brought to the Legion every couple of days to be emptied, and 6 volunteers from the community come to the post at least once a week to sort the toys by age group and gender. In a couple weeks, all of the sorted toys will be taken to Westville High School to be displayed on tables so community members can shop for a particular child on the Santa's Anonymous list, and even more volunteers will be there waiting to wrap the toys. For the last 3 years, we've had volunteer shoppers, and that's worked out well, Serpina said. We have the wrappers all lined up, too. We have so many volunteers who want to wrap, they have to bring their own tables. It's become the thing to do on that Saturday in Westville, she chuckled. After the children's gifts have been wrapped and placed in large sacks, Santa then hitches a ride with some firefighters on a Westville fire truck that plays Christmas tunes and delivers the gifts to the children's homes. Santa doesn't always arrive on a fire truck, though. Sometimes he travels with other groups, according to Serpinas. Someone tells Santa the names of the kids so he can address them, Oakes said. Serpinas said she is thankful for the community support Santa's Anonymous has received for so many years. Westville is a blue-collar community, and I'm amazed by the generosity towards this, she said. They are open-hearted, and I feel really this program won't stop. Our next article is entitled, Teacher Who Stopped Shooter Speaks About Her Experience. This is from the Associated Press, Charleston. A Central Illinois mathematics teacher who helped subdue a freshman student who shot another student has been honored and is talking about her actions. The Illinois Education Association on Thursday said that because of Angela McQueen's quick response to contain the shooter in the Mattoon High School cafeteria on September 20th, only one student was injured, the Journal Gazette reported. McQueen told the IEA that during the moment of the shooting, she didn't really think. I sprang into action because I looked over and I saw a student pulling a gun out, and he was aiming it at students to his right, McQueen said in a video of her IEA interview. McQueen said the student fired a couple of rounds before she was able to force him to point the gun up toward the ceiling. The Mattoon Police Department and the school district said police school resource officer Casey Alexander arrived in the cafeteria and took the shooter into custody shortly after McQueen's action. McQueen said she has always taken active shooter training at the high school seriously. However, she said she didn't think a school shooting would ever happen in Mattoon because it's a quiet, small town. You never think it's going to happen where you're at, McQueen said. McQueen was honored at the high school by state police, the city of Mattoon, and the school district. Our next article is entitled, Happy Birthday, Illinois. Illinois' 199th kicks off bicentennial celebration. Associated Press, Springfield. Happy birthday, Illinois, warts and all. It's the home of the U.S. president credited with ending black slavery and the nation's first black president, as well as a litany of imprisoned governors and other politicians. And until just months ago, it had the nation's longest state budget impasse since at least the Great Depression. Today, its 199th birthday, a year-long celebration culminating with its bicentennial, begins. Day-long events are scheduled at Navy Pier in Chicago and the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. A simultaneous raising of the Illinois state and bicentennial flags follows in locations across the state on Monday in what thus far has been a muted lead-up to the festivities, in what one local historian calls a missed opportunity. Its recorded history began in 1673 when missionary Jacques Marquette and fur trader Louis Joliet became the first Europeans to lay eyes on it. The signature of President James Monroe made it the 21st state on December 3, 1818. Its first capital was Kaskaskia, and its largely southern Illinois population numbered 34,620, about the size of present-day Glendale Heights in suburban Chicago, or Pekin, near Peoria. Since then, Governor Bruce Rauner said in a statement prepared for the Associated Press, "Our history is rich. Illinois has been the home of four presidents: Abraham Lincoln, whose leadership through the Civil War saved the Union; Ulysses Grant; Ronald Reagan; and the first black executive, Barack Obama." The Republican governor noted, he pointed out that Illinois was the first state to ratify the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery, taught the world how to rebuild a city after the Great Chicago Fire, invented such wide-ranging items as the McCormick Reaper and the Twinkie, and ushered in the atomic age. When we look back, I hope we will use this lofty vantage point to look ahead as well, Rauner said. We enjoy unparalleled opportunities for growth. We are the nation's most important distribution and logistics center. We are literally America's transportation hub. We produce 10% of the nation's computer scientists. On this birthday, we want to look at what has been born, built, and grown in our state, and what we learn to invent and build and grow more. State Representative Tim Butler, a Springfield Republican and member of the Bicentennial Commission, has a deeply personal connection to the celebration. Lewis Barker, an ancestor on his mother's side, was Pope County's first state senator, elected to the first General Assembly in 1818. Now, as a member of the 100th General Assembly, Butler calls the Bicentennial a tremendously reflective time for the history of his family and the state. Butler is awed by Illinois' role in producing giants in politics, the arts, Nobel laureates, entertainment, science, and industry. Such a tale transcends a sordid history of public corruption, notably the imprisonment of two governors in a row since 2003, Republican George Ryan and Democrat Rod Blagojevich. The real story, however, is in the state's contributions to industry, business, entertainment, the arts, and more. He said it's incumbent on us, as Illinoisans, to help foster a sense of renewed pride in our state. He said the last quarter century, we've had a tough time in our state, especially when it comes to public corruption and our image around the country, coupled with an economic situation that we need to improve. Those of us proud Illinoisans need to tell that entire story and lead the change in renewing who we are and telling that story to the world. Other states have produced flashy legacy projects, such as the 90 million Museum of Mississippi History and the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum, opening next Saturday for that state's bicentennial. Illinois include a restoration of the 19th century executive mansion, led by Rauner and his wife Diana, and a bicentennial plaza on downtown Springfield, land owned by Illinois realtors. Tony Leone, a former clerk for the Illinois House of Representatives and owner of the historic Passfield House in Bed and Breakfast, just a block from the Capitol, said he and other historians had grander plans a decade ago, but politics and a change of administrations at a critical time, Rauner took over from Democratic Governor Pat Quinn in 2015, conspired to scuttle grand plan. Leone continues to lobby to make a bicentennial building out of the former state armory, just north of the Capitol, vacant for nearly a decade. It should house the state historic library, which was moved to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library from its former home in the old state capitol, he said. The budget mess that engulfed state government and produced billions of dollars in debt since Rauner took office makes such a huge investment unlikely in the near future. But Leone pointed out that the monolithic armory is not going anywhere and raising it would be just as cost prohibitive. It would be the perfect bookend, Leon said, because just south of the Capitol is what was originally known as the Centennial Building, the legacy project for the state's first 100 years. They didn't put a shovel in the ground for the Centennial Building until December 1918, Leon said. It's not too late. Our next article is entitled Potomac Honors Native Son Gone Too Soon by Tracy Crane, Potomac. The town of Potomac paused Friday to pay its respects to a hometown hero and U.S. Marine who endured 5 overseas deployments, including a tour in Iraq that ended with injury and a Purple Heart. Staff Sergeant David Clifton Gentry II died November 18th after a short battle with cancer at his Oklahoma home with his wife, Nianna, and mother, Karen, there with him. He was 32. Staff Sergeant Gentry's ashes were flown Thursday into Willard Airport in Savoy. The next morning, a full escort, including military personnel, Illinois State Police officers, Illinois Patriot Guard riders, and Potomac area firefighters, and the first responders, accompanied his remains to the small northwestern Vermilion County community where he grew up. In the morning, residents gathered along U.S. 136 as the procession came into town. They returned in the early afternoon when it traveled from the funeral home in Potomac Cemetery, where graveside services were held. I've never seen so many flags up and down Potomac, said Harold Hoskins, Staff Sergeant Gentry's uncle. Hoskins, an Army veteran and commander of American Legion Post 428, said his wife and Staff Sergeant Gentry's brother, Ty Gentry, decided on Thursday night to line the main route through town with American flag. He said that when community members saw what they were doing, they came out to help. On Friday, Hoskins' sister-in-law, Phyllis Hoskins, and other volunteers were preparing a meal at the Potomac Legion for family and friends following the service. Phyllis Hoskins said the town's response to the Marines' homecoming was heartwarming. It gave you a good feeling because they appreciate what David has done. The whole town was behind him and was very grateful to see the service he has performed. Staff Sergeant Gentry, an Armstrong Township High School graduate, spent his entire adult life serving in the military. His 14-year military career included 5 departments, all to Afghanistan or Iraq except one. He was awarded a Purple Heart for a tour in Iraq, according to his uncle. Hoskins said his nephew was shot in the arm by a sniper during that tour. He added that if Staff Sergeant Gentry hadn't turned his body just a moment before, he might have been killed. Hoskins, reminiscing about Staff Sergeant Gentry's child, said he was an ornery as a kid. He was very active, always building something and into old cars. He said his nephew's goal was to remain in the Marines and be a lifer. He was still on active duty when he died. Just prior to the start of school, Potomac Superintendent and grade school principal Larry Meinyard held a short assembly to honor our hometown hero, at which they observed a moment of silence for him. We wanted to show our respect to Staff Sergeant Gentry for his service and sacrifice, Meinyard said. That afternoon, K through 8 students filed out of the grade school located on U.S. 136. Older students formed a long line in front of the school, while younger students stood behind a fence across from the cemetery. Between them, a bluegrass ladder truck flew an oversized American flag over the highway. The small group of firefighters stood at attention, and some schoolchildren placed their hands on their hearts as the procession, led by Patriot Guard riders, slowly passed by. Hoskins said Staff Sergeant Gentry's remains will eventually be placed near his grandfather's in Potomac Cemetery, per his wishes. We appreciate all our veterans, but this one was special, he said. Hoskins said he was also impressed and appreciative of others who traveled from out of state to pay their respects, including a Marine contingent out of Terre Haute, Indiana, a Marine Corps chaplain, and captain from California, and a close friend and fellow Marine from Minnesota who served with his nephew. All of these things are so neat, he said. I just wish it wasn't under these circumstances. And now we'll turn to obituaries. The first, Sharon Miller, 81, of Danville, passed away November 26, 2017, at her home. No services are scheduled as per her request. Her body will be donated to science. Next, Jackie Morris, 79, of Hoopston, died Friday, December 1, 2017, at his home. Graveside services will be at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, December 5th, at Floral Hill Cemetery, Hoopston. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Tuesday at Blurton Funeral Home, 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston. Dorothy Judy, 85, of Rossville, passed away at 3:55 p.m. Friday, December 1st, 2017, at Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Living in Hoopston. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Tuesday, December 5th, at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. Funeral services will follow the visitation and will begin at noon Tuesday at the funeral home with the Reverend Matt Stump officiating. Burial will follow in Rossville Cemetery in Rossville. Memorials may be made to Iroquois Memorial Hospice, 200 Laird Lane, Watseka, Illinois, 60970. And now we'll move on to an article from the Catland Village Board. Unleashed dog sparks complaint. Catland. Village Board members heard a report from David Biggerstaff concerning the continuing loose dog reports from the Sandusky Street area. Biggerstaff, a part-time Catland police officer, as well as a resident, gave the board information concerning the long-standing problems with the dogs and their owner. According to Biggerstaff, the owner in question has been continually cited for the past 5 years for the loose dogs. Catland's ordinance states that dogs must either be on a leash or kept in a fenced-in yard and are not allowed to roam freely in the village. As recently as the last village board meeting, a neighbor complained about the loose dogs on his property and up on his deck. Biggerstaff said he has spoken to the Vermilion County Department of Animal Regulation, which has also cited the owners in the past about Catland's ordinance. The county suggested increasing fines for repeated offenses, and after 3 citations, the animals could be confiscated for neglect. According to Catland ordinances, the penalty for the first offense can be between $5 to $100, and the second offense can be as much as $500. However, there is no provision in the ordinance for confiscating the animals. Mayor Butch Schmink said the board will look at the village's ordinance and would consult with the village attorney. Village board member Wanda Schmidt said she would contact the Department of Animal Regulation for its input on the matter. And now we'll turn to some community news. Gallery features Vietnam War veteran. The Danville Art League's Paul Bumingham Gallery features Bob Dondeville from now to January 6th. Bob retired 2 years ago from teaching at the Mount Zion Junior Senior High School, as well as 4 years at Richland Community College. Before and during his years of teaching, he worked evenings and weekends on his body of artwork. It helped him with his post-traumatic stress disorder, which he developed after being drafted in 1965 and sent to Vietnam. He served with the 11th Armored Cavalry as a tank driver and gunner. In his body of work, he is attempting to show the impact of being torn from a blue-collar, middle-class family and then thrown into a world of inhumane treatment to other human beings. He received his bachelor's degree from Illinois State in teaching. His master's degree in oil painting was obtained from Eastern Illinois University, as well as a 36-plus hours in sculpture. He has designed and completed 6 war memorial sculptures, 5 are in Mount Zion, and 1 is located in Assumption. This show is very much an important visual insight into what the Vietnam War was really like. I would recommend planning a visit and bring your friends. Covington crowns holiday royalty. Holiday drive, toy drive to honor Marine. This Thursday is December 7th, but it is more notably known as Pearl Harbor Day. I'm pretty sure you know what this day is all about, but this year we will add a special reason to remember this day here locally. This article is by Sherry M. Askren, President of the United Way of Danville. The Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 728, the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Marine Corps League of Vermilion County have teamed up this year to dedicate this year's Toys for Tots toy drive in memory of a local Marine, Tyler Wilson. Tyler lost his life in June of 2016. Randy Van Vickel, with the VFW, was able to acquire military medals of Tyler's, and in his memory on December 7th, will present these medals to his parents. Tyler joined the United States Marine Corps on September 11, 2007, where he earned an expert marksmanship badge. He served deployments to Okinawa, Japan, and the Korean DMZ, as well as 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan for Operation Enduring Freedom, which earned him a Combat Action Ribbon, a Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, Afghanistan Campaign Medal, Global War on Terror Service Medal, a National Defense Service Medal, and a NATO Medal ISAF Afghanistan. After an honorable discharge, he served another tour in Afghanistan as private security through Triple Canopy at Camp Leatherneck. The first annual Tyler Wilson Toys for Tots toy drive will start at 7 a.m. so that you can come by before work to drop off toys or a cash donation and continue until 5. The actual ceremony to present Tyler's medals to his parents, David and Julia Wilson, will begin at 3:30 p.m. at the VFW. A quote from Theodore Roosevelt said, "What a man does for himself dies with him. What a man does for his community lives long after he's gone." Help us give life to Tyler's memory and honor him for what he selflessly gave to us all, our freedom. I pray you will join us in honoring Tyler and making this a truly memorable day. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live united. And now it's time for reading Rediscover Danville, More Vermilion County Christmas, by Carol Nichols, Director, Illinois SBDC at DAC. This week brings many more opportunities to enjoy the Christmas season with your family in Vermilion County. My 4-year-old granddaughter and I went to see the animated movie The Star recently. The story follows a little donkey and his friends who helped Mary and Joseph on their way to Bethlehem. While critics weren't kind, parent reviews of the movie were very positive, and we enjoyed it. I'm not sure how long it will play in local theaters, but it's a good chance to share the Christmas message with little ones. An opportunity to share the story of Christmas in a non-animated fashion happens this Sunday from 5 to 8 p.m. Visit the Outdoor Live Nativity at Muncie Baptist Church, 205 Main Street in Muncie, Illinois. The church has brought the Christmas story to life for over 30 years. This year, after driving through the nativity scene, the church invites you inside for a dinner, children's crafts, and other events. If you're looking for Christmas music, there are several opportunities coming up in Vermilion County. Enjoy all your favorite tunes with the Danville Symphony Orchestra, the Chicago cabaret duo Menzie and Michael, and Danville High School Show Choirs will join the symphony on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at the Dick Van Dyke Auditorium in Danville. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for December 4th, 2017. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.